A piece of history is being written in the United States Congress. Tomorrow is the day when John Dingell becomes the longest-serving member of Congress ever, surpassing the late Robert Byrd of West Virginia. He began representing the people of Southeast Michigan on December 13, 1955, and 57 and a half years later, he's still there. Congressman John Dingell joins us now. Welcome to Stateside.
Blessings on you. Glad to be here, and thank you.
Take us back, if you will, Congressman, to that first day in 1955. Can you tell us what were your feelings as you walked onto the floor of the House for the very first time as a United States Congressman?
Well, I was a green congressman, brand new, and I always thought I was quite ready, but I found out later that that wasn't right. I was following a great man that I very much admired, my dad, and after I was sworn in, I had the privilege of responding to the House, which had had a day on which they were celebrating my dad's service and honoring him for the hard work that he had done for the people for 23 years. So it was a rather special time, and to be perfectly truthful with you, I broke down and cried when I had to respond to what the giants of the House of that day, people like Rayburn and John McCormick, who was his dear friend, and Daddy Doughton and Jerry Cooper and all the others, Democrats and Republicans, got up to say some very kind things, I think fully deserved, about my dad.
I dare say there are not many figures in American politics who could say that they had such a personal start to their life of public service.
It was a very personal thing, and of course, remember, I was brand new, had family in the gallery, had some friends that had come down from Michigan, had just finished a very hard fight where I had to beat 23 people, some of whom were folks that had run against Dad, and folks of no small prominence, including the National Committeeman, former mayor of Detroit, past commander of the American Legion. And the fellow that gave me the worst fight was a wonderful, wonderful old African-American minister by the name of Reverend Charles A. Hill, who had a voice like thunder.
It's interesting, as I hear you talk about the guy that gave you the toughest fight, and you say wonderful, wonderful. And I get this sense of a spirit of collegiality that existed no matter what your party affiliation. Has that been lost?
Regrettably, yes. And very regrettably, because it was one of the things that made this place work. I've had to defend the fact that people compromise. And then this is criticized quite savagely by both sides, the far right and the far left.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't understand that this was what the Founding Fathers intended we would do. We would address the problems of the people, not in a partisan way. In fact, they contemplated no parties. But the interesting thing was that we were supposed to work together to compromise so that every member and every person represented by any member here would have the right to be heard and the right to participate in the legislation which governed their country.
And you feel that we've lost that sense of that today?
Regrettably, it is largely lost, and sadly in two ways. The awful partisanship that we see. But more importantly, by the fact that the rules that led to openness and to the opportunity for all to participate have been very much abraded and breached and diminished.
What price are we paying as a country for that, do you think, Congressman
Dingell?
Well,
you're seeing prodigious deadlock in this institution. And you're seeing the Senate, which was never really regarded as a legislative body, all of a sudden becoming the legislative engine for things being done. They did it on Affordable Care Act. They're doing it on immigration. And they did it last year on the budget, while the House sat back and engaged in these monstrous battles amongst each other mm-hmm. over things that should not be the subject of controversy.
And as that has changed, can you tell us how just day-to-day life in Congress has changed from what you first experienced in 1955. I mean, we hear certainly people in Lansing talking about how folks come in, and because, of course, we're term limited here in Michigan, so as you know, they're gone. But what is the rhythm like today compared to when you began in 55?
Well, the House here in Washington and the House in Lansing share many of the same common difficulties and problems. When I was here, there were great friendships across the aisle. That's largely gone. When I first came, you had members who had served for a long time who knew the issues and who worked together to resolve the issues and to find a middle ground and to have compromise. Compromise now becoming, as I've said, a dirty word. And conciliation and cooperation and coordination are very, very important to good legislation because, as I've said, everybody has a right to be heard, and every member of Congress has a duty to see to it that all of his constituents are properly represented.
You are a member of the greatest generation, as Tom Brokaw has made that name so well known, and you served in World War II. How did the time that you served in that war affect your thoughts or your philosophies about public service and government?
Well, my approach to government has been affected by a lot of things. I've known a lot of the giants, Harry Truman. I once had the privilege of being in the same room with Franklin Delano Roosevelt. I heard Winston Churchill speak to the House and the Senate. I've been able to meet all kinds of people, great and small. And I've had the privilege of seeing the events that have occurred since I was born, the Depression, the bank collapse, the war, the attempts that we made to bring ourselves out of the Depression, the fact that we thought we could lose World War II, The period of Reconstruction. I watched Roosevelt. I heard him speak to the House. I saw Harry Truman making decisions. Harry saved me and 500,000 Americans by dropping the atom bomb on the Japanese. And had he not done that, that would have been the number of people would have been killed in the landing and in the subsequent campaign in Japan. And he saved an untold number of Japanese. We had the privilege of being idealistic. We went off the war. It was, as has been said, the last good war. No war is good, but at least the people were united on it. And then we came home and we were all determined to rebuild this nation and to see to it that things happened that were good for the country and good for the people. And politics was an honorable calling, and people participated, and they loved the country, and they were all there trying to make it better. Even some of the weird ideas we had were advanced by people who are honorably seeking to make things better. I find a lot of that is gone.
Congressman Dingell, I'm interested in thinking of the years that you've spent, these 57 and a half years of meeting people and your constituents and hearing their concerns and their problems. Have those problems and worries and concerns changed over the decades?
The problems have changed slightly, but the problems that I'm helping people with now are not startlingly different than what Dad did when he was here. If you look, you'll find that members of Congress help with Social Security or pensions or the military or immigration. Those things are still there. We help business with getting regulations that work and make sense. We help people in dealing with regulations or with tax matters or unemployment comp. Those problems are still there. Sometimes the attitude or sometimes the specific problem is different because times have changed. But the basic fundamental difficulties that people have and the basic responsibility that members of Congress and elected officials have is still to help people on the same kind of things that they did when I was a small boy, win a political fight.
It must be very personally hard for you to look at the public approval ratings of Congress that are just dismal. What needs to happen, do you think, to improve that image of Congress in the minds of American voters?
Well, I would say the first thing that ought to be done is the members of Congress and people who seek high office should cease attacking the office and cease attacking the system. I see all kinds of people running for Congress saying what a terrible place it is, denouncing their colleagues. I see all manner of outrageous behavior and outrageous comments made. So as a result, when they get here, they all of a sudden find, by golly, nobody likes me because of all the things that people are saying bad about the Congress, of which some are true and some are partly true, but most of which are untrue, because this is a place where honorable men still work and try to make things better for the country. And the second thing I'd say is the media should do a better job of seeing to it that people understand what a treasure we have and what a fortunate race we are in being Americans and in having the greatest system of government in the world. I think that the average citizen should participate more and actually be active in community and political affairs. I'm not saying which party you ought to belong in. Obviously, I'm a Democrat, and I can tell you that's supposed to be. But the hard fact is everybody ought to participate, and they ought to insist that government is clean, that it's open, and they ought to insist that the representatives in the Congress and elected office, that they address the nation's problems, and they do so in an honorable way, and that the debates not be bottomed on personal attacks and on all the vicious and evil things that we see and hear being said, and all the falsehoods that are said as to win elected office or to those things would carry us a long way forward in making us a better country.
Congressman John Dingell tomorrow becomes the longest serving member of Congress in American history. Thank you for speaking with us today on Stateside.
It's a great pleasure to be with you. Thank you.